Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console. Jane Houghton is our producer this morning. Pretty rocky week on Capitol Hill. A lot of fireworks going on up there. And then all of a sudden, all eyes to the sky as the story changed. And oh, did it. You've heard the story. We may see it if it comes our way. The last I heard, it was headed toward Raleigh, North Carolina. But we're not getting the NORAD tracking. You know, it's unfortunate. In the past, they've given us Santa Claus tracking, so you know where he is across the country. But in this case, the Pentagon spokesman says, you can just look up in the sky. We're not going to tell you where it is. We're not going to track it. You can just look up in the sky and see it when you want. So it's been kind of crazy. The Republicans, are many of them, are saying shoot it down. Mike Pence tweeted out that it should be taken out. And we'll get into some audio with the former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He also suggested that we should take it out and that we should have taken it out already. So you have a lot of people saying we should do this and that. The administration has been a little calmer, cooler, and collected on it. We're going to take you over to the Pentagon spokesman. Now, this is kind of how things were playing out yesterday. He did a briefing, and this is kind of symbolic or reminding me of the White House briefings that we're getting on the documents. And they're trying to come out and be present and be transparent, but they don't have a lot to say. Corinne Jean-Pierre has not had a lot to say about the documents except that the president's cooperating and been responsible. And now you have the Pentagon spokesman who gave out some details, but took about 20 minutes of questions and basically had the same answer throughout the 20 minutes. So we'll give you a little sense of how that was going yesterday over at the Pentagon, because all of the reporters, just like the White House reporters these days, they had a million questions that they wanted to get answered, but they just couldn't get the answers. So this is Brigadier General Pat Ryder. This is yesterday. He is the Pentagon press secretary, and you'll hear the questions and the answers, and hopefully this will let you know a little more about what's going on.
China has said this is just a weather balloon that has veered off course. Why is the Pentagon convinced that this is a surveillance balloon? And then can you give us a little bit more on the status of the balloon? You said it's in the central of the central U.S. What state? Do you have any guidance for people as they see this balloon, or they're trying to photograph it or maybe try and interfere with it?
Sure. Thanks, Tara. So first of all, we are aware of the PRC's statement. However, the fact is we know that it's a surveillance balloon, and I'm not going to be able to be more specific than that. We do know that the balloon has violated U.S. airspace and international law, which is unacceptable. And so we've conveyed this directly to the PRC at multiple levels. And in terms of specific locations, I'm not going to be able to go into specific locations again, other than to say it's moving eastward at this time.
Okay, so that was one of the key questions that we all were interested in. Here's another of the key questions we want the answer to.
General Ryder, who is controlling this balloon right now?
Again, we know that this is a Chinese balloon, but beyond that, I'm not going to have specifics.
But is it, you say that it's moving eastward and it's over the continental U.S., it's not over Montana anymore. Is the Chinese government controlling the movement of the balloon, or is it just floating with airstreams?
Thanks, Jennifer. So I'm not going to go into any specific intelligence that we may have. Again, we know this is a Chinese balloon and that it has the ability to maneuver. But I'll just leave it at that.
And once it's over a body of water, will you shoot it down?
Again, right now we're monitoring the situation closely, reviewing options. But beyond that, I'm not going to have any additional information.
And here's one more question you probably have been asking yourself. And here's the answer we get from the Brigadier General.
The position of the balloon classified?
Phil, right now, what we're not going to do is get into a hour-by-hour location of the balloon. Again, we're monitoring it closely. As I mentioned, right now, it's over the center of the continental United States. That's about as specific as I'm going to get.
I understand my being convenient, but does the public not have a right to know if
the balloon is over the state? The public certainly has the ability to look up in the sky and see where the balloon is.
So when I heard him say that, I went immediately online to see if I could get the website, ChineseSpyBalloon.com. But it was already parked. Somebody already snagged it and was trying to sell it, and I didn't go any further than that. But anyway, that's what they had to say at the Pentagon. Well, as you know, the Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, was headed to China. It would have been the highest level American trip to China so far in this administration, but they scrubbed it. Here's what he had to say.
Sovereignty forced him to postpone his trip to Beijing.
I made clear that the presence of this surveillance balloon in U.S. airspace is a clear violation of U.S. sovereignty and international law, that it's an irresponsible act, and that the PRC's decision to take this action on the eve of my planned visit is detrimental to the substantive discussions that we were prepared to have. I can only imagine what the reaction would be in China if they were on the other end.
So that's a sense of what's been going on with the balloon. And obviously we'll be talking with many of our experts this morning about the balloon, the latest on how to handle it, what to do next, the politics of it all. And that is all on the way here on the Saturday Morning Update. We'll be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, John Gizzi, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com, Jennifer Harper from the Washington Times, KT McFarland, of course, former deputy national security advisor to President Trump, and also Jim Trusty, our legal expert, is on the way, and Cheryl Atkinson. So the pros are going to be in this morning with us. And we were talking a little bit about transparency and the complaints from the White House press corps about kind of going around in circles. So they'll ask a question at the White House about the document situation. That hasn't gone away, by the way. It's a nice little respite for the administration to have the balloon up there. Takes the heat off the document situation, but it ain't going away, as you know. A lot of questions about that transparency, and what will happen is they'll ask a question at the White House, and Corinne Jean-Pierre, the White House spokesperson, will say, well, you have to talk to the DOJ, and then they'll ask the question at the DOJ, and then the DOJ will refer it over to the White House counsel, and nobody ever ends up answering the question. So it's been frustrating. And this is Jackie Heinrich at the Fox News Channel asking Corinne Jean-Pierre on Wednesday of this week about that transparency.
Can you assure us that the White House has been and continues to be as transparent as possible, meaning that where there haven't been disclosures, something has prevented that?
What I can say is what the President has said many times, and you've seen it in our statements, is that we are cooperating fully. The President and his team is cooperating fully, and we will continue to do that. And I'll just leave it there.
And one note about transparency and things. The President was doing a victory lap yesterday, and in spite of the balloon situation, he went up to Philadelphia, took the Vice President, so you can imagine the cost of the travel on that one to take them both up, and the environmental impact. But they went to Philadelphia so they could talk about the jobs numbers, and it was like 500,000 jobs added, 517, and they were only expecting 150-plus. So they had some good jobs numbers. One of the economic reporters that I did see yesterday said that some of this is a factor of they correct the entire 2022 numbers in the first report in 2023. So there are adjustments that they make to the 2022 employment numbers through the whole year. So you get 12 months of adjustments. And it could have factored in there, who knows, but just mentioned that because you don't hear that in many of the mainstream media outlets. So anyway, he's up there, and he decides to take a question or two at the end of his victory lap, talking about the jobs reports and how great the economy is and how happy we should all be. And this is what he had to say when he was asked a question.
If you want to ask me a question about the economy, but I'm not going to answer any question about anything else because you never will cover this.
Will you take any blame for inflation, Mr. President?
Do I take any blame for inflation? No.
Why not?
Because it was already there when I got here, man. Remember what the economy was like when I got here? Jobs were hemorrhaging. Inflation was rising. We weren't manufacturing a damn thing here. We were in real economic difficulty. That's why I don't. Thank you.
There was no, and he walked off, right? He just flew out of there. So there was no inflation problem at all before he got here, as I recall. I think we were doing pretty well in the Trump administration with inflation numbers. But, of course, as the president would say, it was horrific inflation when he got here. As he has a tendency to exaggerate. Some might call it misrepresentation. Others might call it lies. You call it what you want. It is 6:20. It is the Saturday morning update, and Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Maryland side of the Beltway. In Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, no issues on the inner loop or on the outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, go ahead and set your cruise control. Lanes are wide open, both on the northbound side and on the southbound side. In Prince George's County, if you're traveling between the two Beltways on the BW Parkway or 95, I don't have any reports of any problems there. And in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound and westbound lanes are clear and you're at speed. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
7 News is on cold alert this morning. We are waking up to temperatures around the teens to low 20s. We're only going to reach highs in the low 30s this afternoon. Sunny skies, light south winds. That'll help the wind chill out a little bit better than yesterday. And then tomorrow we're looking at the temperatures to rebound very nicely back above normal into the low 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
It is 14 chilly degrees in the nation's capital. 6:21, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday morning update continues. Hearings on Capitol Hill to try and find out the differences in how Republicans are treated and the president is treated when it comes to the handling of the document investigation. Now you've seen the difference in the way they handled former President Trump and the way they handled President Biden in terms of who got to go in. They made a big deal this week about the fact that the president's house at Rehoboth Beach was searched and they didn't find any classified documents. They've had 3 months to get any documents out of there that might be there. I mean, you know, to take a victory lap, oh, no classified documents found at the beach house. The president's been down there. His staff's been down there. You don't think somebody said, hey, why don't you guys take a look around and see if you can find anything that says top secret on it? So anyway, reason I mention this is that Mark Short was on the Fox News Channel the other day, and he was talking about the way the Bidens have been handled versus how Vice President Pence has been handled by the DOJ and NARA, the National Archives folks. So here's the former chief of staff for Vice President Pence explaining the difference in treatments.
The vice president, as he mentioned, asked out of a bunch of caution counsel to review boxes he had at his house. They found some documents. As you recall, Congress at the White House, the transition was not a normal transition. And so, in essence, he was left after January 6th to pack up the residence, and he accepted responsibility for that. But he quickly provided that information to the archives and Department of Justice. And the process the archives laid out is to say, it's our job at the archives to come collect them. We had scheduled a date with them the following week to collect them, bring them back to D.C., review them, and the archives determines if anything is still classified. If it is, they let DOJ know that. That's what happened with President Biden. Instead, with Vice President Pence, Department of Justice sent FBI agents that night to his residence in the middle of the night when he was in Washington, D.C. for the March for Life. It is a double standard the way they've treated it. And just yesterday, in fact, when the Vice President's lawyer was on the phone with Department of Justice to talk about a consensual search, we had camera crews showing up at the Vice President's house and office because Department of Justice was leaking that information in the very moment. It's not the way they treated the situation with Joe Biden.
So, of course, that's a former member of the Pence administration. We have that clip from Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State. Here's how he would handle the balloon situation we have.
It should be surprising to most Americans. We ought to bring this darn thing down. We have the capabilities and tools to do that. I'm confident that we could have done so safely. I think we probably still can do so safely, and we ought to do that. I'm happy to hear. I hope it's true that we've stopped it from transmitting data that it was collecting. And the Chinese say this was just a weather surveillance device. That's just fundamentally inconsistent with what the Chinese are doing all across America today. The fact that they've now penetrated our airspace, put a very visible symbol of their country over our airspace, and we have done nothing. This is a green light for bad guys all around the world, including Xi Jinping. There is the military significance, but also the political significance attached to the fact that Xi Jinping is clearly probing to see if the Biden administration is serious about never giving an inch about protecting our country. And to date, it doesn't appear to me that he's prepared to push back against them in any serious way.
So that's Mike Pompeo, CNN, reporting this morning that a second balloon has been spotted over Latin America. That from CNN this morning. Oh, boy. Now, this does not take the spotlight off of the southern border issue and the whole immigration problem that we're having. Of course, the balloon, is, again, it's a diversion. We're all talking about it today and probably a couple more days, and then it'll go away. They'll either take it out or it'll go back to China. And then we'll go back to reality where we have the southern border mess. And this is Alejandro Mayorkas, our esteemed Secretary of Homeland Security, might remember the number of fentanyl deaths we're seeing in this country every day. It's all on him because he's not doing anything to secure the border. But he says he is. Here's how he explains it.
Do you know where they are and who they are?
So gotaways have been a challenge from year to year, regardless of the administration. What we are doing is we are dedicating people, physical assets, and an increasing reliance and use of innovative technology.
You know, we've heard this physical assets and innovative technology. They had some pretty good physical assets down there, these huge containers that they were making a wall out of the large container truck type things, you know, that's physical assets. And we're always talking about all this advanced technology, and I guess the advanced technology is where they have the night vision, and so the Secretary of Homeland Security can watch on the cameras as all these people cross the border and then run all over Texas until they get to Louisiana or Oklahoma. I guess that's our advanced technology. So two Republicans so far have filed articles of impeachment against the Secretary of Homeland Security, and this is how Kevin McCarthy, the new Speaker of the House, explains it.
We will never use impeachment for political reasons. It's just not going to happen. That doesn't mean if something rises to the level of impeachment, we would not do it, even though we said we were going to have an inquiry. In December, we hit the highest number we've ever hit. So what you'll find is the committees are together. They'll start the inquiry and let it go wherever it takes them.
Do you have the conference, the confidence of the conference to move forward with an inquiry?
Oh, yeah. I think Democrats will join with us, too. Nobody wants to see the border the way it is today.
Well, here's one Democrat that's not going to join with Kevin McCarthy, and that is our old pal Jerry Nadler. Well, here's a guy that just every time you hear him, you're like, oh, man, did you really say that? And here's what Jerry Nadler said about the hearings, and this was specifically hearings on the situation with the way the Venezuelan and Cuban immigrants will be handled by the administration. And Nadler's not happy about the upcoming hearings, so here's how he would like to cast those hearings.
The first hearing will showcase the racist tendencies of the extreme MAGA Republican wing of the party that seeks to close the border to refugees from places like Cuba and Venezuela.
All right, it's racist. So in response to that, Wesley Hunt was talking on the Fox News Channel this week, and he is an incoming new congressman. He is African-American. He is from Texas, and here is how he responded to Jerry Nadler.
This is actually not about race. This is actually an issue of public safety. The Democrat Party, unfortunately, uses race as a scapegoat for everything. I am here to hold this administration accountable to understand that there are issues of race that need to be addressed. And, sir, this ain't one of them.
Whoa. Boy, did he shut Jerry Nadler down. One other note I wanted to get in real quick here. We heard so much about the January 6th committee, and you know everybody's complaining that McCarthy's kicked Swalwell, Schiff, and now Ilhan Omar off of some specific committees. They're still on other committees, but not the sensitive ones that, of course, Schiff and Nadler were on intelligence, and Omar was on foreign affairs. So everybody's all amped up about that. You may remember the January 6th committee. They wouldn't let Jim Jordan and Jim Banks on there. They put two Trump-hating Republicans, Adam Kinzinger and, of course, our friend Ms. Cheney from Wyoming. Anyway, the committee report, you've probably seen it and heard it, but even NBC News this week, Tuesday night, was talking about how some information did not really end up being released from that report. And here's how NBC cast it about the government's role in protecting on January 6th.
The January 6th committee's final report was more than 800 pages, but some material did not make the cut, including much of its findings on the failures of federal law enforcement leading up to the attack.
The chief investigator of the January 6th committee says the government could have prevented it.
Law enforcement had a very direct role in contributing to really the failures, the security failures that led to the violence.
How convenient that that was left out of the report. But no, it wasn't a partisan committee at all. 6:31, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Coming up next, we'll talk with Jennifer Harper. Then we've got Jim Trusty on the way, John Gizzi, Cheryl Atkinson, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and KT McFarland. Do stay with us. And in the news, this is from the Associated Press. This is how the AP is reporting the story on the balloon this morning. A huge high-altitude Chinese balloon is sailing across the U.S. The spectacle drew severe Pentagon accusations of spying on Friday while sending some excited or alarmed Americans outside with binoculars. President Joe Biden had been inclined to blow it out of the sky, officials say, but bowed to strong recommendations against that by top military leaders who feared harm to Americans on the ground from debris from the large, heavy ship. Secretary of State Antony Blinken abruptly canceled a high-stakes Beijing trip aimed at easing U.S.-China tensions, and the Pentagon has now acknowledged reports of what it called, quote, another Chinese surveillance balloon flying over Latin America. That, the latest from the Associated Press. It's 6:33, time for a check of the traffic and weather, and LBD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, Beltway is clear, both on the inner loop and on the outer loop. No crashes or construction slowing you down. In Fairfax County, on 66, you're not tapping the brakes eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're at the posted speed limit on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And finally, in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, no crashes or construction there. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
7 News is on cold alert this morning. We are waking up to temperatures around the teens to low 20s, and we're only going to reach highs in the low 30s this afternoon. Sunny skies, light south winds, that'll help the wind chill out a little bit better than yesterday. And then tomorrow, we're looking at temperatures to rebound very nicely, back above normal, into the low 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
14 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:34, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Moving right along on the Saturday morning update, I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Jennifer Harper. She writes Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, if you were to listen to the Biden administration, we're just having the time of our life. It's the greatest time in American history to be alive, to be saving, to be investing, to be spending. But I'm not so sure that the American public agrees with that. And I heard some fascinating poll numbers this week, and you have them in your column.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you're 100% right there. And I've got this early in the morning, I have a wonderful Fox News poll for you. This is a poll of registered U.S. voters conducted January 27 through 30. Just going to give you some numbers this morning. And Fox News asked a very dismal question to the respondents. They said, would you say America is a dysfunctional family that's breaking apart? Well, here's what they found. 81% of registered U.S. voters agree with that. that America is a dysfunctional family that is breaking apart. That includes 86% of Republicans, 86% of independents, and even 74% of Democrats. How about that? And among the sexes there, 83% of women and 79% of men also agree. And the alternative question was, would you say that America is a tight-knit family that is emerging stronger from challenging times? And only 16% of voters overall agree. I'll spare you all the other stuff. You can imagine what the breakdown is. But also some other little numbers here in terms of economic conditions. 80% rate them, rate economic conditions as a negative right now. And they generally feel unhappy with how things are going in the country. That's 73% said that. Again, this is a Fox News poll. And they also had a few choice numbers about President Biden. You're talking about him this morning. Well, 66% of voters disapprove of the way President Biden is handling inflation. 61% disapprove of the way he's handling immigration. 61% disapprove of the way he's handling border security. Another 61% disapprove of the way he's handling the economy. 51% disapprove of the way he's handling the U.S. response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Again, my gosh, such a damning poll. This is from Fox News. 103 registered U.S. voters conducted January 27 through 30, Rick.
Well, just wait till they stop at the gas station next time. How are those gas prices doing for us?
Well, you know, I think we may be gasified again, because if you sort of thought the prices are going up, like, in little increments, well, you're right. And our good friends at GasBuddy.com, that's a great site if you're following the gas drama out there. But anyway, here's what they say. For the fifth straight week, the nation's average gas price has increased, climbing 9.7 cents from a week ago. That's 10 cents in a week. That's a fair amount anyway. And now the average price is $3.49 per gallon as of Monday. And they compile their data from 11 million price reports from 150,000 gas stations across the country. And they say the national average is 33.3 cents from up 33 cents from a month ago. Ooh. And 14.1 cents per gallon higher than a year ago. The national average price of diesel has risen 5.4 cents in the last week, $4.65 per gallon. Not very happy land for the truckers. And in case you wonder, the state of Washington has a very high price per gallon, $3.98 a gallon, and the highest of all in Hawaii, $4.88 a gallon.
Ouch.
California, $4.48. The state of Washington, $4. And the lowest, Texas, at $3.09 a gallon. So that's your gasified report this morning.
They make that stuff down in Texas. You know, it's fascinating in the news feeds that there are more stories about Donald Trump than anybody else continuously, every day, day in and day out, month after month. What is the latest on Donald Trump?
Well, you are 100% right about that. He's like the gift that keeps on giving to the press. I mean, there's always something amazing to write about in one form or another. And this week I picked out something that he had to say, and this is part of his public outreach for his 2024 presidential campaign. This is the way Mr. Trump is thinking right now. And he says, what we are witnessing under Joe Biden and the radical left is the absolute destruction of our country, which is why I ask every American one simple question. Was your life not better before Biden and Kamala seized control of the White House? But to save America from the clutches of these socialists, I'm counting on every patriot to join our fight. The MAGA movement, the greatest grassroots political movement in history, has and always will be powered by the people. Again, this is Donald Trump. The strength of this campaign will never be determined by the size of our supporters' contributions, but by the sheer number of grassroots patriots in our rank. Now, how about that? That's kind of the latest from Donald Trump.
You know, for a teen in high school or somebody in college, it must be really difficult to figure out where you're going to go with your life because of all the changes in technology and compensation, and then you got people making $1 million a minute on crypto, and then the bottom drops out of crypto. What are you finding about how young people view some of the different job paths and careers?
Well, we're going to center on one specific job path this morning that's very, very familiar with everyone that lives in the Washington, D.C. area, and that is working for the federal government. This is a pretty interesting and slightly alarming survey of what young people have in mind. It's coming from Meritalk. This is a Virginia-based public-private partnership that provides news and analysis about government information technology primarily. But they here's what they found in one of their polls. They said when more than 85% of young people say they have no interest in being a part of the government workforce, it might be a cause for pause, if not time to panic. Again, this is coming from Meritalk. They say, according to a recent career aspiration study by Axios and Generation Lab, just 14% of Gen Zers said they want to spend most of their career in the government and nonprofit sectors. The pollsters found that jobs at companies of all sizes are favored by the generation over careers in the federal space. In case you're wondering, Gen Z are people that were born between 1997 and 2012. And there's another factor at work here. This poll also found that young people's leading motivator as they advance in their careers is personal fulfillment, cited by 49%, followed by wealth. That's about 25%. Anyway, this is a poll of 824 U.S. adults aged 18 to 29. That was conducted January 11th through 18, and that information is coming from Meritalk, and we thank them for that.
You know, the funny thing is when they reach about 40, they're going to realize that the only way to get to personal fulfillment is to have the wealth. But, you know, after you spend those years in college, you're still living in utopia, you know. You know, it's been interesting to see kind of since Hollywood and, you know, the various entertainment industries became so politicized and the award shows became basically political platforms. The Grammys are Sunday night. Any surprises for us there?
Well, yes, there is a surprise. That's an interesting one and kind of in the direction that you're talking about. And indeed, the Grammy Awards are on Sunday night. And if you choose to watch, you can watch for one familiar face in particular. Believe it or not, First Lady Jill Biden is going to be there, and she's actually an official presenter at the Grammys. This is according to an announcement from her office. And just if you're wondering, the 65th Annual Grammy Awards will take place at the Crypto.com Arena in Los Angeles and broadcast live at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you're wondering, this is what her office says. Mrs. Biden was in California over the weekend to attend a series of events in San Diego and Los Angeles in support of the Biden administration's cancer moonshot, along with her own nonpartisan Joining Forces initiative that is for military and veterans families, along with their caregivers and survivors. And Joining Forces is a government initiative founded in 2011 by Michelle Obama and Mrs. Biden to improve employment for military spouses and remedy veterans homelessness, among other things. And again, Grammy Awards, Jill Biden, well, I don't know if it'll be politicized or not, but there is definitely a political presence there.
I remember all those award shows that Melania was a presenter on, don't you? Jennifer Harper, Inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Thank you so much.
Have a good weekend, everybody. Thanks.
And we've got Al BD in the WMAL Traffic Center, then back with Jim Trusty.
Maryland side of the Beltway looked at the cameras, and I didn't see any crashes. There isn't any construction being set up yet in Prince George's County or in Montgomery County. You're going to go bridge to bridge and not tap your brakes. In Montgomery County on 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, all lanes are clear in both directions, northbound and southbound. Now in Prince George's County, traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, no reports of any issues there. And on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound and westbound lanes are clear and at speed. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
7 News is on cold alert this morning. We are waking up to temperatures around the teens to low 20s, and we're only going to reach highs in the low 30s this afternoon. Sunny skies, light south winds, that'll help the wind chill out a little bit better than yesterday. And then tomorrow we're looking at temperatures to rebound very nicely back above normal into the low 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Jordan Evans in the First Alert Weather Center.
It is 14 degrees in the nation's capital. We are at 646 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is a Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Jim Trusty. He is a member of the Trump legal team. He is also a partner at IFRA Law here in Washington and the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, always a pleasure to have you join us.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you.
The National Archives and Records Administration has come under a lot of fire recently. Last week, we mentioned that the NARA General Counsel would be having an interview on Capitol Hill this week, and you have an update.
So the General Counsel for NARA was brought in by the House Oversight Committee and was interviewed, and apparently it was well attended. There was apparently 12 or 13 different congressmen, maybe even a little bit more, that attended, which is not always that typical. So there is some political interest in this whole issue of NARA. What typically happens is a transcript gets made, and then the politicians start to release portions of it. You know, each side might release a statement or two that they like. And then eventually the momentum creates a situation where the full transcript gets let out to the public. From where we sit on the team representing President Trump, that's what we have to kind of wait for. We don't have any sort of special access. But eventually we hope to see a transcript. And really the heart of what was going on with the questioning, as I understand it, is that it really relates to how President Trump has been treated differently from other presidents, and that's particularly acute now with what's happened up in Delaware with the Car-a-Lago case for President Biden. So, you know, NARA has tried to position itself as a really as a group of very important, objective historians that have this, you know, sacred obligation to gather materials from the presidents, and there's some truth to that concept. It makes sense. But what we've seen, just some of it that's out there, includes NARA Inspector General reports that are very damning, not so much about political bias, but just about competence. And there's a report that we looked at from 2011 where they did an internal audit at NARA and said, hey, we're missing 1,400 boxes of classified materials. That's not a small amount.
Oof.
As the Inspector General went through their investigation, they said, no. You know, we found 1,300 and change. There's only 81 boxes. We have no idea where they are, but we'll certainly keep an eye out for them. And I thought to myself, that was quite a way of extracting lemonade from a lemon. I mean, 81 boxes of classified materials that went missing at NARA with no real explanation, just this thin hope that they'll find them eventually. It kind of says something about the competence. So I think there's a lot more questioning. I would love to be in the room to do questioning at some point. But the top folks at NARA, and I don't mean, you know, rank and file people that work at the facilities, but the archivist in chief as well as the general counsel, they deserve a lot of questions right now.
The media has been focused on the Alex Murdaugh trial. Of course, that kind of strange murder case down in South Carolina. Trial taking place in Walterboro, South Carolina. Jury selection earlier in the week. Monday will be the third full day of testimony. And as this has opened now, Jim, what strikes you about the week? And just a quick, real quick, because it's complex, just a real quick recap for people that haven't followed this case, exactly what the charges are on Alex Murdaugh.
Right. So Alex Murdaugh is charged in this prosecution with the murder of his wife and his 22-year-old son on a piece of property that they typically kept a lot of dogs at, you know, pretty rural piece of property. And he's charged with their first-degree murders in a scenario where law enforcement came to the scene because of Alex calling them and saying he had stumbled upon his murdered wife and son. Alex's life began to unravel dramatically in public eyes because more and more was coming out around the time of this murder about his financial desperation. In the opening statement for the prosecution last week, the prosecutor talked about how the walls were closing in on him financially because he had committed a variety of frauds. And what happened this week was really an interesting piece of evidentiary procedure, which was the jury was excused for big chunks near the end of the week to allow for people to testify outside their presence about the economic crimes that Alex had been involved in. And this was so the judge could basically take it in firsthand and determine how much of the fraud, how much of the theft he was going to let the murder jury hear about. And so he heard from, I think, about eight witnesses with different chapters of financial desperation or thievery, including how Alex stole from the law firm where he worked, which had been founded by his great-grandfather. This was a real iconic family in the Lowcountry of South Carolina. He also stole from his housekeeper's estate. He had a housekeeper who died in what's a very suspicious slip-and-fall incident on the property. And Alex basically pushed her sons to sue him, which was, of course, going to be covered by insurance, not his own money. And eventually, the son sued for wrongful death. He got his best friend from law school to represent them. And somehow the lawyers got $4.3 million while the sons got zero.
Ooh.
So in civil litigation related to that, Alex admitted that he stole $4.3 million from her estate. Now, a little bit of an aside here, and it's a real rabbit hole to run down, but you know, because of all the things that have happened with Alex, like the staged shooting of him while he was driving to Charleston, the murder of his son and his wife, well, they looked back into the situation with the housekeeper and actually exhumed her body from the grave 4 years after her death. And it showed some very devastating injuries. I think there was like a crushed skull. There were some cracked ribs. You were not going to get much by way of tissue examination at that point. But, you know, they looked at it, and it's been very quiet. And I have to wonder what in the heck is going on with that story, you know, whether or not there was truly a fatal slip and fall, or whether there's another whole chapter in Alex's book that's going to come out at some point. It's going to be very interesting. So anyway, the housekeeper, some of the testimony came out from her sons, for instance, and from the other lawyer. And then we even heard from a dirty banker who put $400,000 in Alex's account to cover a $350,000 deficiency that he had when he was trying to pay off the housekeeper's estate. So there's a lot of folks with a lot of stories, and the judge, I think, is in this position of figuring out how much is too much or how much is a distraction. A couple of quick thoughts on this, Rick. One is, I actually think it might have made a lot of sense to indict the theft-type behavior in the murder indictment. In other words, put them all together and force the defense to be on offense, trying to separate this into separate trials. If they'd told the story in a way that made it clear that this stuff was inextricable, that they needed to get into the finances and all those crimes to explain the murder, it might have been a little bit easier for the prosecution to keep the whole story intact. The other thing in terms of how closely connected that evidence is, there was a longtime friend of Alex and a partner at the law firm who described confronting him with how Alex had stolen the money from a client, about $350,000, from the firm. And when she did that, she said he was essentially defensive, nasty, I think at some point maybe sheepish as well, but didn't really deny that he did it. And 12 hours later is when the murder occurred. So I think that's a good physical hook to kind of connect the theft behavior with the murder, that you have this kind of increasing emotional vice of Alex realizing his world is crashing in at the time of the murder. So big part of the week, again, devoted to this issue about what's going to be allowed in front of the jury next week. Also some crime scene and forensic testimony and even discussion of the fact that 30 different guns were seized from Alex's collection, and there were two missing, one of which being consistent with the murder weapon of his wife. So, Rick, what I'm left with is really just the question of whether there'll be a made-for-TV movie out before there's a verdict. This case has everything in it. It's going to be interesting to watch over the next week or so, and we'll see where it goes.
Sounds like a real prince of a guy.
He's got some issues, to say the least.
Jim, we always enjoy you spotlighting cases that we may not have heard of and some pretty extreme situations. So if I get this right, we have somebody in a shoving match in Philadelphia. The local authorities will not prosecute the case, but the DOJ comes in and prosecutes a shoving match?
Yeah, this is the old phrase, don't make a federal case of it, come to life. So, Rick, you know, and there's a real political kind of slant to all this, but I think the interesting part is kind of the DOJ decision-making more than the facts of the case. The facts of the case is there's a gentleman named Mark Houck, who's a pro-life kind of protester, what they call a sidewalk counselor, and he would go sometimes with even family members from his family to nearby abortion clinics or Planned Parenthood centers, and he would stay far enough away where he's not immediately violating any federal access laws, which there are. But on one particular day last year, he got into a verbal scuffle and eventually into some form of shoving match with a man named Bruce Love, a 72-year-old Planned Parenthood volunteer. And what Houck said during this trial, which we're going to get to in a moment, is that Love was telling Houck's 12-year-old son, your dad is a bad man, your dad hates women. And as you can imagine, things escalated, and supposedly, according to Mr. Love, Houck shoved him a couple of times, knocking him to the ground on the second shove. Well, this gets reported to the local authorities. The Philadelphia local authorities do not charge Mr. Houck. There's a civil case that gets filed against Houck. That gets dismissed. And so by all accounts, it looks like no one's going to touch this stupid little shoving match with a 10-foot pole, no matter what the politics. Well, enter our current DOJ. I think the bad part, the ultimate unfortunate part of this for Mr. Houck, is that all of this happened around the time of the leaking of the overturning of Roe versus Wade, as well as the opinion coming out in the fall. So in September of 2022, just 5 months ago, the FBI executed a search warrant at his home and arrested him for violations of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, or the FACE Act. Again, it's a statute specifically designed to protect, you know, women going into medical centers for treatment. And that's where these kind of geographic limits, you can't be within 50 yards, come from. The allegation here was that he had engaged in violence that was keeping people from accessing the clinic, which, again, seems like a stretch. Well, in December of last year, the Associate Attorney General, Vinaya Gupta, who is the head of civil rights prosecution at DOJ, indicated that the ruling that came down from the Supreme Court was a devastating blow to women throughout the country, and the DOJ would vigorously enforce the FACE Act. Well, it looks like Mr. Houck got swept into that kind of statement where he, because of the raw allegations that he had violated the FACE Act, he bought himself a federal case. And there's been about 30 of these cases brought nationally by civil rights or by U.S. attorney's offices. Anyway, it took all of about 3 days, and the jury came back, I guess, Monday, and announced that it was a clean sweep, that Mr. Houck was not guilty of either FACE Act violation that had been charged. And so he is now turning his guns towards DOJ, thinking about suing for malicious prosecution. But, you know, to me, the story is not so much, again, the ultimate outcome as it is the decision-making. You know, that local authorities who know the facts say no, that civil cases with a smaller burden of proof get dismissed. But somehow this DOJ thinks it's so important to enforce the FACE Act that they take this kind of threadbare matter to trial where they lose. And, you know, meanwhile, if you want to do the comparison game, Rick, since the leak of the SCOTUS opinion, there's been 80 different pro-life pregnancy centers or offices that have been attacked with everything from just graffiti to firebombing. And it took until last week for the first two federal arrests to be made. So, you know, this is not to wade into the abortion debate as it is to just talk about the differences in philosophy that this current DOJ brings to different political causes.
And the thought of the resources that could have maybe been directed toward drug cartels?
You could do a lot better than a shoving match in Philly.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in D.C. Follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. As always, Jim, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Have a good weekend.
And you too. We've got 7 o'clock news next with Heather Curtis, then back with John Gizzi, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Cheryl Atkinson, and KT McFarland all on the way.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.